Welcome back to the Better Divorce Podcast. I am your host, Paulette Rico, and I'm here to guide you through the storm of divorce into much calmer waters. So hold tight. Whether you're contemplating divorce, in the thick of it, or just rebuilding post-divorce, I've got you covered. Each episode, we'll tackle the tough topics, share resilient stories, and offer practical, helpful advice to help you navigate with confidence wisely. Remember, you're not alone. I've been there, and so have millions of others. And your brighter future awaits, I promise. Ready to turn a tough time into a time of growth? I know you are. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you find this content helpful, please share it with others who might benefit. Now, let's dive into today's topic. See you soon. I'm hosting a retreat in Belize. Some of you may know, but I used to live there. And Belize is a melting pot of culture that carries over into the food, the music, and the fun. It is the best of both vibes, from jungles to ground you and beaches to heal and soothe. I lived there for many years and go back and forth between there and Atlanta because I can't get enough. My co-host, Tierra, visited me and didn't want to leave either. No one does. This is paradise, folks. My co-host, Tierra, and I chatted about the perfect all-inclusive location for you ladies that are going through a pivot in your life and need to reset, renew, and rebuild, and we nailed it. We kick off with a three-day adventure in the luxurious eco-resort Copal Tree in the southern Belize jungle, followed by three luxurious days on Thatch Cay Island, a private island over water, oceanfront oasis in the turquoise Caribbean along the Belize Barrier Reef. Whether you're going through or just coming out of a divorce, especially with a narcissist, a career change, or you just want to get back to the parts of you that you haven't seen in a while, we are talking to you. Make note, May 4th to the 10th, 2024, and start packing. Space is very limited on the private island and in the jungle. Be sure to act now. We have a passion for leading truly transformational healing events, from heart-opening, accessible guided meditations to connection-based life-changing tools and practices. We curate each moment with care and compassion to ensure every lady is taken care of from the initial registration to the final namaste. It's better in Belize. Welcome back to the Better Divorce Podcast. You may know who I am, you may not, but just in case you don't, my name is Paulette Rico, and I am the founder and CEO of Better Divorce, Better Divorce Academy for Mediation and Certified Divorce Coach Services, Better Divorce Blueprint, the book and workbook, and audiobook, and soon the online course, and my retreats, Best Life Ever in Belize. Yes, Belize. I said that. And my next one is May 4th to the 10th. The landing page is afterthenarcissist.com. But today I am going to talk about money with a CDFA. And you may or may not know what a CDFA is. And if not, hang on, grab your notebook, because you're going to want to take notes. If you are in any stage of divorce and you have assets, and you know, significant is a tricky word. To some people, that could be $10. To other people, that could be $10 billion. But money is money. And when it comes to divorce, we talk money. So welcome to the podcast, Hazel Secco. She's the founder and CEO of Align Financial Solutions. Welcome, Hazel. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
I'm so glad. So for just the definition of what a CDFA is, could you just define that term? Many people don't know what they are and don't know what they do. So what is a CDFA and why might someone want one?
So CDFA is Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. So a lot of time, I guess, people go to attorney for all the aspects of the divorce. But the CDFA is sort of like a new designation that kind of helps with the financial impact of divorce.
And do they act as like a CPA or a financial advisor? Is it very similar? Is it very different? Is there any crossover?
Yeah, I think some CPA might just do a little bit of crossover work, but CDFA focuses a little bit more of like a personal finances. What's the implications because of the divorce, what happens, you know, after divorce to my retirement planning, or, you know, kind of like a scenario planning, financial projections of what's going to happen after divorce versus, I think CPAs, they tend to become a forensic accountant during the divorce. And then they do a little bit more of a investigative financial transactions type of work.
That's good, because there's a lot of different financial professionals that a couple or an individual could or might need if they're facing divorce. So one might be a tax preparer, right? Such as a CPA, somebody that can look at your income and expenses and tax ramifications and help you with that. And making sure that you also have a copy, not only a digital one in the cloud, but right, an actual, like, tangible heart that you can hold in your hand copy, because sometimes things vanish in divorce.
Yes. Yes.
If you're just listening to the audio, my hands are, you know, like, poof, I can't tell you how many percent. Well, it was on my phone. It was on my computer. I had it on this drive and I don't know what happened to it. So always make sure that you have a hard copy and a cloud copy, maybe even two copies. So when in doubt, make two copies. Then the tax preparation, but then somebody to actually look at the assets that you may have had while you're married, right? Would be a financial advisor. Are you putting money in checking, savings, bonds, you know, Robin Hood, crypto, stock market, pretending to know what I'm talking about with money. You know, are you investing it in short term, long term, high cap, like, you know, growth, all those things? Like, it's overwhelming, so that you have that long term strategy throughout the marriage of how to grow your marital wealth, right? That could be somebody that you've had, but that may not be somebody that you want to continue to work with because, well, the spouse may have a relationship with that professional as, or more than a relationship than you have had, or maybe it's a professional, financial professional that you've had a relationship with and your spouse doesn't as much. So it can be, it's almost like that situation when you're married and like which friends you're going to keep and which friends there you're going to lose. Like, are you on team wife or team husband?
Yeah.
Financial professionals can be weird that way emotionally.
No, it's like really interesting, especially as a female financial planner, you get looked at a little bit weird because, you know, you would think of them a little bit more like a, you know, paralegal side of the finance or, you know, assistant or like whatever like that. And then it, because of that specific skewed relationship between professionals and wives or, you know, women specifically, that's one of the reasons that I started focusing, helping women through divorce, because when they already had a certified financial planner or financial planner for their together finances, it's great because they're only dealing with the husband's side. But once that dynamic is over, yes, the financial planner keeps, you know, suggesting to work together, but, you know, women don't feel as comfortable because you don't know what their relationship is like. They might be a lot closer personally or professionally. So, you know, I recommend having like objective, separate relationship professionally, and then especially to establish basically your new financial life, new beginning after divorce. CDFA could be a good transitional professional that can help during the divorce. So it's like, what does it mean? Like equitable division of the assets, but what does that mean? How much will I actually get? Depending on the what kind of assets you have. And then after divorce, you can carry on working with that person if they are also working as a financial planner so that you can secure your financial future for your new life.
Yes. So I want to come back to that because that's a key conversation of what exactly is equitable division of marital assets. And some states are equitable division and others are community property. So that those may be two separate conversations based on where you live and if you're in Canada or Europe. So, you know, hang tight. The laws are slightly different everywhere, but there's going to be some division of the pie. You know, in some states, if there's $100 in the checking account, one spouse gets 50 and the other spouse gets 50, no qualms about it. But there are some other issues that may come into play with that. And I like to think of it as non-marital, premarital, and marital, and those different buckets that may be empty or quite full based on how long have you been married? Do you have a business together? Did you have a business before you met, and many, many other constituents. But before we go down the money road, I want to start with like, what got you to have this love for money and want to, not that I'm saying you're greedy by any means, I mean, for understanding it and, you know, helping people with it. Cause for many people, money can be a sore spot and a fear based on how you grew up. My biggest quote that I remember my parents saying about money was, money doesn't grow on trees.
That's a famous one.
I would go outside and be like, oh, money doesn't grow on trees. And I would be like, what does that mean? Of course, from a four-year-old's point of view, I was like, okay, well, I think leaves grow on trees, or we had a cherry blossom tree, so cherry blossoms do, but I kind of got it. My mother was an entrepreneur. My father was corporate, but he did actually become an entrepreneur after he left that job. So I understood money and making money and documenting money. And my mother used to always have receipts everywhere. Receipts. She was all upset if I didn't give her a receipt for something. She's like, did you get a receipt? I'm like, I forgot the receipt, you know? And I would be like, let me go back and get it, you know? So then to the point when Ashley stopped working with her, I would keep my own receipts even though I wasn't working. And I would give her my receipts just so she could tax deduct everything I spent money on, just so she'd have extra receipts to make up for all the receipts I didn't give her when I was 12. So it's a funny money story, right? And I was like, oh, Mom, I've got some receipts for you. I know you didn't actually spend this money, but back in the day when you get a receipt that didn't actually say where the store was, you know, like that, we'd get grocery receipts and they were this wide and like this long. And it would just say 79 cents, 29 cents, $1.50. It didn't actually say what you bought, you know.
Right, now,
like they tell you where you were, what store you're at, what time you left, what time you showed up, who was the, like, it's talk about Big Brother. But and of course, most everything is now digital too, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's all, like I emailed you the receipt. You're like, you did? Okay, you know. So it's a little different, but the point is we all have a money story. Right. So what made you get into helping people with money and particularly with divorce? What's your story?
Huh. That's a great question. Because that really is important to me, like why I started what I'm doing right now. So, I mean, it's going to be like a long story, but I'll make it shorter.
Okay. I love it, Hazel.
I actually start with my clients what their money story is. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's so important. Sometimes like that money blocks or money script that they have can be really intrusive when they're making decisions, financial decisions. But mine started off, as you said, it's like no means that I'm obsessed with money, but like I was obsessed with money. Like when I was growing up, I was I didn't know why, but I really, really wanted to be rich. I really, really was almost, yeah, obsessed about saving and money and like, how do I become rich type of thing. And I realized when I was already grown up why that was the case. It's because I didn't get to like live with my mom or dad because now I know that my mom was in a financially abusive relationship with my dad. But it was interesting because you shared a little bit about your story, but my mom was an entrepreneur. My dad was a gambling addict. And then, you know, she was the provider and he was always, I was too in the situation. It was very unhealthy, but I didn't realize it at that time. But because of that, actually, I went to major in psychology. I thought something was wrong with me. And then I wanted to study more. And then I wanted to learn more about how we think, because it was just not making a lot of sense to me from like upbringing and all the a financial situation with the family, how everything was intertwined, but I just couldn't understand it. So I went to the, I was born and raised in South Korea, and then I went to Japan, and then I came to University of Buffalo. I mean, everybody asked me why Buffalo, but I ended up there, and then I majored in psychology, and then I ended up becoming a financial advisor right after, which was really interesting because I thought I'm going to be a psychologist. So I guess that, you know, like kind of subconscious obsession over money kind of brought me back to that financial advisor, financial planner type of work. And then I didn't know where I was really going with that job, because like financial planner could be everything, like, you know, like it could be insurance agent, it could be like transactional, like, you know, salesperson, it could be just a lot of different things. But I was a lot of different things. And then I became a certified financial planner thinking that I'm going to, you know, be really successful entrepreneur, business owner, like whatever you name it. But I guess when I started having children, I was, you know, I married pretty early, and then I just recently had two beautiful daughters. And then I was just realizing that, like, what am I doing? Why am I doing what I'm doing? And I felt really like not as good as some of the male financial advisors or male counterparts. And I felt really, I don't know, self-conscious and like almost having a lot of different thoughts about being a financial advisor. And then that's when I realized like I'm not listening to what I want to do, but I'm kind of listening to what society views as a typical financial advisor. And then I was trying to follow after them, but I wasn't good at following after them. Mm-hmm. I was good enough, but I wasn't good, you know, like I wasn't good myself. Like I was doing horrible, like mentally. So mm-hmm. that's when I figured out like, clearly this is not working. This is not what I want to do. And then what do I want to do? And then that's when I sort of went back to my old history of, you know, my money script, my mom helping women. How do I advocate for a woman? I was my mom's advocate for my entire life. How do I make that into my work? How do I help women? And then that's how I sort of got to here.
So you took that experience you had as a child or a young teen, young woman, from remembering how your mom struggled because of your dad's addiction or issue with, you know, gambling, which has got to be stressful. I can't imagine for somebody that's not a gambler, I can never understand why people are so emotional about sports. And my husband has to remind me, they're gambling, Paulette. It's about money. It's not about the game. And I go, they gamble? Horrible. Like I don't gamble. We, you know, I go to Vegas to see the shows, you know, or to, you know, look at art galleries and cute, like amazing shoes that I would never wear, but they're super cool. Or, I go on a cruise and I walk through the casino, you know, I'm like, all I hear is ding, 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 ding. And I go, oh, can we leave now? But gambling is just not mine. Cause I don't like the feeling of risk. You know, like, or I'll say, okay, how much is it worth for me to sit at a slot machine for an hour or 10, whatever amount of time you've got time to kill? Okay, $100. And I go, okay, it's entertainment. If I make money, great. If I lose $100, an investment. It was entertainment, like going to a show or something, right? I don't want my money back. And if I put in that lat, well, you don't even put in quarters anymore. It's all just, you know.
Yeah.
There's something about putting the quarter in the machine that's different than hitting a button.
Definitely.
I know. So when you used to put a quarter in, I mean, I'm almost 60, so these are the memories I have. You put it in and you go 25 cents. You're like, okay, all right. You hit it and you lose. You go, all right, another 25 cents. Whereas if you just hit a button, you're like, it's only money. It's only
right.
It's just a button.
Delete.
Yeah. It's like deleting email. You're like, bye. Yeah. Anyway, so that's my aversion to gambling. So, and I didn't grow up in a family where anyone gambled. So I can only imagine the fear or the trepidation of having that sense of wanting to have some more security, right? Mm. Yeah, and safety of needing that safety of having that, your poor mom. So let's talk a little bit. Why don't people know about CDFAs? They know about CPAs and they know about financial advisors, right? You know, I know there's like 59 acronyms after somebody's name because there's many different ways of being a financial advisor. I think they invent new ones just to annoy people, but... why do you think it's such a mystery?
I think CDFA is a fairly new designation, I would say. And then also a lot of just typical financial planners without particular designations could technically help throughout the process. You don't need the designation to help. So right. I think it just has been sort of hidden in the back. But I think there has been always the divorced financial advisor or financial advisor in, you know, that was kind of helping the household. But right now, maybe we're just trying to make sure that women do have enough resources to go through divorce. Because a lot of times, like, I mean, for me, I seeked out for this specific designation because women were coming to me after everything was settled and they were like, oh, my divorce was amicable and this is what I got. And then I would be like, what happened? And then they said, oh, it's like, this is what my husband said. This is the right way to do it. And then we did it and then it's all finalized. And then I would go look at that. And then they didn't think about the taxable implications. So it's like after tax, he got so much more than what she would have gotten. And then, but it's already settled. So it would be so much more costly for, you know, everyone team to go back to the court and attorney, everyone to adjust that. And then now it would just take so much more effort and time and money and everything. So people just settle and people were like, whatever. But like, it's really hard to recoup what you lost during divorce. It's such a like devastating life event. And then a lot of people, they want to move on. So they're like, forget it. But that's so unfair. You just didn't have, you know, enough resources to make yourself informed and educated decision. So why don't I help them during the process? That's why, you know, I got involved in doing that. But I think that's one of the reasons that's a little bit.
True. Although I am the first to advocate, in fact, many financial advisors reach out to me knowing the work I do, and they ask if I would partner with them. And I always say, are you a CDFA? And you know, not to be condescending, but to basically be educational. And many of them say, and I'm not joking, no, why? What's that? And they get defensive. And I go, well, if you're a financial advisor, you pretty much should do your homework and not be asking me what that question is. You should already know. But I don't say that. I go, well, it's a designation and da-da-da. So maybe you should think about becoming one. So because to me, it's vital. If you're going to be an expert in a very laser-focused problem-solving world, which is my mantra, you know, my mission, I'm literally on a mission. It is essential that I work with those professionals. I work with the, I would say hiring, It's like if you need a root canal, you don't go to a heart surgeon.
Right, exactly.
And if you are want or need a divorce lawyer, don't go to just any lawyer. You don't go to a DUI specialist or a bankruptcy attorney or a real estate attorney. You only do family law. That's it. That's your gig, right? And I work with CDRE, certified divorce real estate experts, and certified divorce lending professionals. In fact, my husband is one. He's a mortgage expert, but he has the designation of a CDLP. And it's very essential that you work not just with a coach, but an expert in divorce, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't coach on wellness, although I could. I'm an Ayurveda consultant, macrobiotic chef, and yoga teacher, trainer, and but I don't. I don't coach people on fitness, health, money. I'm just divorce. That's it. That's my thing. That's what I'm an expert in. You get in trouble when you don't find the right professional for the right task, right? It's like,
yeah.
So number one, I think that's really good. Let's shift a little bit about these tax ramifications, okay? Because I write memorandums of agreement, which is a mouthful. I like to call it an MOA, but most people are like, what is that? It's an agreement that we write in mediation where I act as a neutral party that helps the couple walk through the journey of coming up with an agreement through all of the categories that the courts require for divorce to hold water, to be legit and, you know, be real. And as they do that, of course, most of those topics have to do with money, right? Not always. Sometimes it's, are you going to pick up Susie at 2 or 3 o'clock?
Right.
That has nothing to do with money, although depending on the person. I spent too much gas while I was waiting for you. And I, you know, it always comes back to something. But you have to know that the agreement, if you're privately mediating, is controlled by the couple versus when you're litigating and it is controlled by the litigated process and ultimately decided upon with the judge if you cannot come up with an agreement. So it's contested unless if it's 99.9% uncontested, it's still contested. You have to agree on everything, literally everything. Mm-hmm. So I write up these MOAs and I don't do it, but I see sometimes that like the wife will get this IRA and the husband will get that IRA, but one is a Roth and one is a 401k. So yes. One, the taxes have been paid before and one, the taxes have been paid after. And the person that has to pay them after now is just inherited debt. They don't think of it that way, right? But so it's not always equitable, right? So important for people to know. So how do you help a client that comes to you, particularly when the other party has not been transparent about what the assets are? You know, they have to hunt and they're guesstimating what might be in the accounts. It's hard when you don't know.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because a lot of people, like even if they were a earner, like breadwinner or successful women, they don't know what they have. I mean, mm-hmm. It's hard. We have kids. We are caregivers. We have family. We work. Like there's so much going on. Like it's hard to track everything. So a lot of times, you know, I mean, I deal with mostly in the tri-state, but cases that you submit the affidavits to the court or attorney, they don't know that attorneys are not going to make sure that you know every single item that you have. That's one of the biggest reasons I feel like the organizing finances with a certified divorce financial analyst is so important, because your life depends on it. Your financial future depends on this piece of paper that could be wrong. A lot of people, they have a misinformation or not updated information. The account number has changed. The financial institution has changed, but they don't know. And then they use the wrong data. And then if the court, or especially like you said, if it's litigated and then it's it's done by a judge who's just looking at the paper to process this. It's just, it's the wrong information. It's just surprising, but actually not surprising to see so many mistakes in this a piece of paper, affidavit that you have to submit to the, you know, the court judge, attorney, and everyone.
And speaking of affidavits, the domestic relations financial affidavit, known as the DRFA, if you want another acronym in your life, get divorced, because there'll be plenty of them. I should create a little acronym list, but DRFA, yeah. How difficult that task is for most people. I'm going to say 90% of divorcing couples, the wife has difficulty filling this out, right? So the wife has her version. The husband has his version, or shall we say spouse A and spouse B. And the numbers aren't always going to be congruent. You know, even though they're sharing a savings account, the numbers might be different, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, we have to understand that if you filled it out January 1st and then somebody else filled it out February 1st, the numbers would naturally be slightly different because of the market, you know, and spending habits and saving habits and all that. But for the most part, it's either apathy, lack of knowledge, lack of interest, or the person that's on top of it, it dazzles it down to the penny and is a little obsessed with it being exact. Like usually when I see affidavits with the 0.01, I go, we got one of those for you, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the other person just writes like 6,000. Like no bank account is ever $6,000. It's always $5,923.97, right? It is some point $6,000, but rarely. So it's you see the different personalities too, of the vague vanilla kind of, you know, whatever type of filling it out. And it's usually in, you know, pink marker. pencil or, you know, crayon, and the other person that has it all typed up and, you know, a spreadsheet.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's all perfect with the tabs and like color coded, and they've already put one in each column for the, and like, oh, this is going to be a fun mediation because you can just sense the difference in the people, right? But
yeah.
So, right, one of the things I love CDFAs do, and I love you to expand on this, is creating different scenarios. Like if you receive blank for a settlement and you invest it in situation A, that you could live to the ripe old age of blank with blank percentage of success without living under a bridge. I don't know if that made sense. And if you receive this settlement and you invest it this way, then you could have an 85% chance of, you know, never running out of money, you know? And if you take settlement A, B, settlement, and you invested in scenario C, then you'd have a 90% success of, you know, never running out of money. So I love those pie charts of like different scenarios, and that most financial planners don't get, you know, it's a different way of seeing it. And I know particularly for women, they like to hold it in their hand, visualize it, and understand that when I'm 99 years old, I will not run out of money. So therefore, I'm going to be okay accepting that offer, that settlement, because I'm going to be okay. I'm going to call it an insurance policy that some of them are seeking. Now, nobody can give you any guarantees, but as far as it being at least a percentage, right? I think that's so helpful to so many people.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of time the divorce, like attorney's code of ethics is to get as much as possible. Just that's how they perform and work during divorce. So that's why I feel like the financial professional could chime in to give like insights because, you know, for example, like women, depending on your financial goals or dreams that you might have or what you want to prioritize, those scenarios should differ. Like some women is like, I don't care anything about finances. Like I want to take the custody. I totally 100% understand as a parent, but sometimes, you know, like I want to get a retain a primary residence. Like, I want my children to grow up here. But if the financial aspect of that doesn't make any sense, and then you're holding onto the house for another like 2 to 3 years just to keep it, and then, you know, like you're wasting that financial implication during that 3 year process. So it's like, I want to look at it holistically to see like what your goals, you have these goals, and then depending on what you do during the process of divorce, that's going to make differences in this situation or that situation. Like you said, probability of success. If you get this much of child support, how long will that last? And, you know, there's a million of scenarios you can build, but I feel like it's a lot more visual and clearer to women, especially like going through a lot of complex scenarios. And then, you know, looking at it from just like a high visual standpoint, this is going to make life a lot easier. Versus this one, you know, keeping the home and not as much cash available, but I'm just going to keep the home and then I don't have cash flow coming in. Then what are you going to do in like 5 years? Like, you have to think about your retirement planning or.
Right.
There's just so many things to consider. So it's like to have the financial status in one kind of aggregated profile and then see like what you have. And just compare, like, what doesn't make sense? That doesn't make any sense. Like, you should be able to say that that does not make sense for my financial future.
Well, the problem that I see, and I don't know if you agree or disagree, when people come to me, and it does depend if they're coming to me for mediation as a couple, where we're trying to work through what is possible versus somebody coming to me solo and they're, you know, really looking for somebody to basically support what they want. It's a different goal, but the house is a contentious issue. And sometimes, depending on the ages of the children and the situations, particularly with special needs children, and you have a large percentage of divorcing families with special needs children now, but the women typically get attached to the sheetrock. Mm-hmm. Like, to them, it's like memories. And this is where we brought the first baby home from the hospital. And this is where we had Christmas. And there's all these memories and like the house and the tangible things like the furniture. And like, it's not a liquid asset, you know? I mean,
right.
It's actually a liability. You've got real estate taxes, you have insurance, you have maintenance. You have heat, gas, you know, internet. It's and do you qualify? Do you have the income? And I've seen many times a judge will award a party the marital home, only to find out that they do not qualify to buy their spouse out.
Yeah. So I feel like that's one of the biggest advantage of having a divorce, like a team of divorce professionals, including the financial expert. Because they're like, we are there, like empathetic and, you know, emotionally there for you, but we're not emotionally attached to the house. So we'll be able to see more objectively what's the right thing to do. So a lot of times, like, they want to keep the house, yes. And then they're like, yeah, I can make it work. I can make it work. But whenever I see that kind of, you know, kind of fixated to keeping the house, and then have to liquidate it for cash in 2-3 years, that was just not a good decision. It's just an emotional decision. And then I'm there to guide you not to make a mistake on that.
Right. And having the right real estate expert and mortgage expert there too, a qualification, because it's rate and term. It isn't even a refinance in divorce. So it's a different experience. You might have a different interest rate and the terms be different because of the buying out of the equity for the partner is due to divorce and not just, you know, because you want to put in a swimming pool. It's a different, right. You know, process because of that. So there's so many things having to do with divorce that have to do with money. You know, what do we say? 86% of divorce involves the sale or purchase of real estate, but 100% of divorce involves money. And you're going to have to figure out what to do. And unfortunately, I did a case that just had $800,000 worth of debt. and we had to do a bankruptcy as a part of their divorce agreement. So it isn't always the assets. Sometimes it's about who gets less debt, as in who gets more assets. So that's another thing too. Is it chapter 7? Is it chapter 13? And what are the ramifications also? So money is a complex thing. What I want everyone to have this takeaway with finding the right financial professional for you, making sure everybody's situation's different. No embarrassment, no guilt, no fear. Take a deep breath, get grounded, and reach out to those people that can really give you the guidance, the education, the options, and the tools that you need to be able to make the decision. The professionals will not make the decision for you, but they're going to give you all of your options. It's like going to a buffet. You know, you have to figure out what you're going to take and what you're going to leave behind. So otherwise you get a bellyache if you take it all. So I love this conversation. You are adorable, fabulous, gorgeous, so intelligent. So Hazel, tell everybody, what's the best way to find you, learn about you, follow you, and learn more about you?
You can always email me at hazel@alignfinancialsolutions.com. That's probably the best way to reach me.
Perfect. So thank you, everybody. Don't let money scare you. It's scary when you don't understand what to do. And also when you are told by your spouse or someone else that that's just not the way it's done. Or don't you worry about it. I got it handled. I'm going to take care of everything. And this is what's going to happen. As soon as you start to hear that, you probably want to say something like, okay, I hear you, and don't agree to anything. So always important to make sure you have the right information before you make any decisions. So you know how to find me, Paulette at Better Divorce Academy. See you next time. Thank you, Hazel.
All right. Thank you, Paulette.
Until next time, have a better divorce. It doesn't want to stop. It's being weird. There we go. Thanks for joining me today. If you were inspired by today's episode, please share it with a friend or a loved one. My hope is you feel empowered to take some action, no matter how big or small. Action that allows you to step out of the chaos and thrive on your own terms. If this podcast added any value to your day, please review it on iTunes, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Until next time, keep thriving in the chaos.